It's Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, nearly 1,000 Wisconsin deer tested positive for chronic wasting disease in the state-run survey last year. That's nearly twice as many deer that tested positive in 2017. We'll learn more about the study and what it could mean for the state's deer herd moving forward. First, it's Food Friday, and today we're talking about steaks. What you need to know when you're at the grocery store or butcher shop, what cuts are good for different kinds of meals, some tips and tricks for prepping a piece of meat, and best practices for cooking steaks at home. Jordan McKay is a James Beard Award-winning food writer and the author of multiple cookbooks, including his latest, Franklin Steaks, Dry-Aged, Live-Fired, Pure Beef. Jordan, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you reflect a little bit on the current state of steak in America in this book. Tell us more about that.
Well, it is, the ultimate way to succeed in making great steak is to start with great meat, and in America, we actually have a lot of great meat, and I've traveled around the world researching steak, and a lot of people in other countries find themselves craving American corn-fed beef. On the other hand, we also have a lot of sort of average beef. It gains flavor from what it gets to eat. So if it only is raised on a diet of corn for a very short time, a short life, then it's just never going to have as much opportunity to pick up flavor. So really finding the greatest steak is about finding the people who kind of put the most into raising their cattle.
So is it possible to get that higher quality, better tasting piece of meat in a regular grocery store? Or do you have to be a little more intentional about how you find it?
I think it is possible. A long time that they have the U.S., the DA grades of steak, prime, choice, select. Nowadays, in good grocery stores, we can find prime beef, where that used to be pretty much reserved for steak houses. Prime beef is generally, it's better marbled. So a lot goes into the quality of beef, and that can be the genetics of the cattle herd. And then again, how and what it's fed and how old it is another question. And so prime beef, you'll have the best chance to have really good, robust flavor, but I find it very fun to sort of, now that we have so many other ways to find meat, and whether it's mail order or local farms, I love to just explore what else is out there, things that are raised for longer on pasture, that might, or 100% on pasture, and different breeds, etc. So I love to experiment, but yes, you can find good, very tasty beef from the store, but it's not the end of the journey.
I have to say there are some fruits and vegetables in particular that I thought I wasn't very fond of, or that they didn't taste like much, until I tasted a really good one, maybe an heirloom variety, maybe something that had just been picked. Is that similar with meat? Are there, are there types of beef, maybe heirloom breeds or different ways of raising them, that you might think you know what a good steak tastes like until you taste a really good steak?
That's a great question. And, I've had the same experience with fruits and vegetables myself. And it is actually true with steak. One question that I had in going into writing this book, which I should mention, I did with the co-author Aaron Franklin, who is a famous barbecue guy from Texas. And but one thing that I wanted to see was whether breed of cattle had an impact on flavor. So sort of in the way varieties of grapes might, will change the way a wine tastes. Ultimately, I found that breed is not something that necessarily has a huge impact on the flavor of beef. However, I did have one of my greatest revelations in doing this book was a steak that I had in Spain, in northern Spain. And that sort of redefined the flavor of beef for me. And I started to inquire what was it that made this beef so incredible. And it turns out a lot of it was about the age of the cow at the time of slaughter. And here in the U.S., almost everything that we see commercially will be between 22 and 30 months old by the time they're slaughtered. In Spain, it's not uncommon to find cattle that are 6 to 12 to 15 or even 18 years.
Oh, wow. And, that's a big difference.
It's a huge difference. And on top of that, they'll spend most of their time in pasture or the whole time on pasture. And just getting that old allows their flesh to take in a lot more and a greater diversity of natural compounds, which ultimately flavor the beef. Now, it's true that it, when it's that old, it is tougher and it requires dry aging to tenderize it. And here in the U.S., most diners really prioritize texture and softness, which is not necessarily the case in Europe. For me, a silkiness and a super tender steak is not as crucial to me as great, deep, complex, beefy flavor.
We've been eating steak for a long time, haven't we?
I definitely think so. I kind of start the book kind of looking back on the history of people eating steak. And indeed, when you go back and consider the cave paintings in Lascaux and in other places where they've discovered these, 30,000 years ago, a lot of the paintings are of oryx, which would have been the precursor to the modern day cattle. And one can only imagine that being able to bring down a giant, fierce, horned animal that could feed, dozens and dozens of people for a long time with delicious beef would have been an amazing feeling back then when you were probably cold and hungry a lot of the time.
We're talking with Jordan McKay right now. He's a James Beard Award-winning food writer and the author of several cookbooks, including his latest, Franklin Steaks, Dry-Aged, Live-Fired, Pure Beef. And Jordan, let's get down to the basics here. We're going to the grocery store where we want to cook a steak. What's the first thing to think about which cut of meat we should get?
Well, that's a great question. And I mean, we have to think about a lot of things, besides how many people are we going to feed? How much do we want to spend? How we're going to cook it? So generally when we go to the store, we have a sense of that. I love to get from, if you're lucky enough to have a great local butcher, if it's a special occasion or, where we have guests over or something like that, I love to get a giant on the bone, 2-inch thick rib steak, what in France they call the Côte de Bœuf. I love that. And those are remarkable pieces of meat. If it's just at home, and perhaps you're just cooking something on a Tuesday or Wednesday night and you're feeling the need for beefy protein, my favorites are what they would call the offcuts, the ones that the butchers didn't even use to market that much, but have now been coming into fashion. And then I'm talking about like the bavette, the hanger steak. These are, in older steak cultures like France, these are the ones that you would often see done for, just a classic bistro steak frite.
Mm-hmm. Frite is exactly what I was thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what about whether we should be grilling it inside or outside?
That's everyone has their own preferences or everyone who's super geeky about steak. And I'm always torn. I really love both ways. Like everyone else, I don't know what the weather is like there in Wisconsin, but,
we had snow yesterday.
Okay. So that would probably direct me indoors. when spring finally hits there and it's warm enough to get outside, I love to fire up the grill. But I've got to say, one of the greatest parts of cooking the steak is developing that crust on the outside. And often the best way to do that for me is in an old cast iron pan, on the stovetop. But what comes with indoor cooking is the smoke, the splattering grease, all of that, which my wife usually doesn't take that kindly to. So in fact, I have started cooking a lot of steaks, even in a cast iron pan on a burner outside, because she'll come by the next day and wipe, you know, her finger on the cabinets and notice the grease.
And Jordan, I just do want to say that just because there's been snow doesn't mean we haven't been grilling. I was grilling on Sunday, and our board op Sarah was just grilling this week too. So we are a hearty bunch out here in Wisconsin.
I forget. You know, I've lived in California so long that I've become weak.
We basically think if you can get to the grill in winter, you probably should be grilling. So there's that. We're talking with Jordan McKay, co-author of the cookbook Franklin Steaks, Dry Aged, Live Fired, Pure Beef. And we're talking about everything we need to know about buying, prepping, and cooking great steak. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your favorite way to cook steak at home? Do you have a favorite cut that you go back to all the time? What bumps have you run into with cooking steak? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Right now, we're picking up our conversation about steaks and everything you need to know to make a great one at home. Jordan McKay is with us, co-author of the new cookbook, Franklin Steaks, Dry Aged, Live Fired, Pure Beef. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how to cook steak? Do you know what you're looking for when you're at the butcher counter at the grocery store? What are some of your favorite sides to pair with steak? And if you have any tricks for cooking steak, call in and share them at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Jordan, I want to go to that subtitle on your book and ask, what is dry aged? We see that a lot. What is it and why do we want it?
Great. Yeah, it's a really fantastic topic. And I have to say, dry aging of beef is one of the biggest trends that I'm seeing around the country nowadays. Dry aging is actually, it's an ancient technique of simply hanging a meat carcass or a piece of meat and letting the bacteria that are inside of it do a little work on eating away at some of the chemical bonds that that tenderizes the meat and also gives it a little bit of a funky and more interesting complex flavor. Now, most people are interested just in the tenderization, as especially if you're, you know, if it were kind of the old days where people would eat cattle that had a life of work or a life of walking around on the pasture, and the meat would have been tougher. Therefore, you sort of needed to hang it for anywhere 10, 14 days, after which the meat really relaxes and becomes much more tender. After 14, 21, 28 days, it starts to pick up this very interesting flavor. Some people have, you know, connected it to the cheesiness, funkiness, mushroomy, umami compounds begin to form in the meat. And nowadays, chefs have been taking dry aging to what would have been kind of considered preposterous levels before. And there we're talking 90, 100, 200, even over 360 days of dry aging. So, and there the meat really can start to develop flavors like truffles and blue cheese that become too much for a lot of people's palates, but some people really get into it.
So it sounds like that dry aging process is similar to what you often do with game meat also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I find that especially with a lot of American beef, which might not be as kind of beefy tasting as what we're seeing in other parts of the world, that dry aging can really add a lot of interest and funky deliciousness. Again, it's those really mushroomy umami qualities. So, but my sweet spot is probably between 45 and 60 to 90 days. You know, I like it in that range.
And you actually say that we can do it at home, even though I have to say we've been kind of terrorized about, you know, food poisoning and things like that.
Yeah. You know, I think you can do it at home. The kinds of things that happen from aging meat in a proper cellar. And we tell you how to do it in the book. You know, I've had stuff that's been there hundreds of days and never had any problem with that. And our meat safety system in the U.S. is really very good. But the reason why it's was not common, besides needing the space of a cold that is kept very windy as well, the meat loses water over all this time. So it actually becomes lighter and smaller. Thus, the meat becomes more expensive. So the cost of keeping it plus the cost of diminishing volume makes it more expensive. But nowadays, people are willing to pay more for better, more interesting meat. So sorry about that.
We're talking with Jordan McKay. He's a James Beard Award-winning food writer, and he's the co-author of a new book, Franklin Steaks, Dry-Aged, Live-Fired, Pure Beef. And let's go to the phones, and Renee in Little Suamico is up. Hi, Renee.
Hi there.
Hi, what do you want to tell us?
Well, we get our beef from the farmer down the road who actually, our grandkids go there and pick out the little calf when it's still a milk replacer and things. And anyway, we buy his pets. So is there a difference when an animal is raised like as a pet and they're calmer, and does the meat get different flavor to it? Because the steaks from his animals are phenomenal.
Thanks for that call, Renee. Jordan, what do you think?
That is a really good question. And I definitely think there is a difference. Calmness and just the lack of stress in a life is really important for the development of an animal's flavor, the tenderness of the beef. Of course, that becomes a very, very crucial aspect during the time of slaughter. And in fact, if cows feel any sort of fear or stress before that, it can actually ruin the quality of the meat. And so so slaughtering operations nowadays take very, very great care to make sure that cattle are not stressed or startled. But I think during the course of its life, indeed, just as with a human, you know, stress is just so damaging on all these levels. So, you know, I think kept as a pet, enjoying a good life, some of this beef that I talked about earlier from Spain that I had, it was so amazing. I asked people, you know, that it's really famous there, Galician beef, which is from the northwest corner. And I would ask people there, what is the secret of Galician beef? And they said, well, these cattle, these families up there, farmer families, they treat their cattle like members of the family. You know, they cook for them. They make sure that they have warm water in the winter time. And so definitely it will improve the quality of the beef, the treatment of the animals. And so we should all hope for that all the time.
Thanks for that call, Renee. And let's go now to Polly in Round Lake Beach, Illinois. Hi, Polly.
Hi. And I have to agree with him about the treatment of the cattle, because we just had our two when we lived in Idaho, and they were wonderful when we had them. Our neighbor raised most of them there, but we were able to pick out a couple while we lent him the fields. The other thing is have you ever heard of, I think it's just terracotta. It's a terracotta clay cooker that you can use on top of the stove. And you just use a dry rub on your meat and you put it in there. And it just keeps all the juices in.
Hmm.
And you don't add any liquid to it.
Yeah,
no,
and Jordan?
I have a terracotta cooker. I've never thought to do steak in it. You know, it encloses on the top. It's great for chicken. But I think there's sort of a steaming activity. And so for this, for instance, in this book, we specifically just take on steak, which would be what we would call a quick cooking form of meat, you know. So that is, you know, grilling hard on the outside or searing, and in a clay cooker, I would probably do something that was more like a braise or a slow roast of a tougher piece of meat, whether it's a brisket or the short ribs or something like that. But with steak, you know, and we talk a lot about this in the book. I mean, one of the great keys to flavor is getting that crust on the exterior. And that is where complex and delicious those beefy but also sweet caramelized flavors develop. And so a lot of the greatness to us of a great steak is that juxtaposition between that sort of crunchy outside layer and then the tender, beefy interior.
Thanks for that call, Polly. And we don't have much time left, but I want to let people know that if they go to WPR.org/Food Friday, we've got recipes up there from you, Jordan, how to cook flank, skirt, and strip steak. We've also got your green salad with garlic vinaigrette. Sounds great. And salsa verde. But I wanted to talk a little bit about seasonings. Are there particular seasonings that you really find yourself going back to all the time, Jordan?
Well, you know, that's an interesting point. In the book, we really just focus on salt and pepper because I think when you have great beef, you just want to taste that. And so we'll talk. We have, you know, yes, condiments. You know, if you have a salsa verde or a chimichurri, love that. Sometimes I'll rub a little garlic on a steak, or I love to, especially at the end, you know, drizzle a very good olive oil. But for the most part, if you have really good beef, we don't like to do anything to it, you know. And so, but it's something that I plan to explore a little bit more. But a lot of people love their rubs and stuff like that, you know.
I have to say, when I was growing up, steak was definitely a kind of a special occasion. I mean, not, you know, only once a year or something, but we didn't have it certainly every week. And my mother would put just salt, pepper, and then a little, I guess it was garlic powder, not garlic salt, because there was regular salt. And to me, like, that's the taste of steak. Yeah. You can taste the beef, but you also get that little garlicky flavor.
No, I agree. And certainly, I think we do, you know, we have a recipe in there for salsa verde, you know, just an Italian combination of garlic, anchovies, and green herbs, which is just fantastic with steak. Oh, and actually, wait, really? Oh, sorry. I do love to sometimes do a rub with anchovies and lemon zest and red chili peppers.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Well, Jordan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it.
That was Jordan McKay, James Beard award-winning food writer and co-author of Franklin Steaks, dry-aged, live-fired, pure beef. And you can go to WPR.org/Food Friday for a few great recipes.